Schertel Talk, the podcast dedicated to everything about the sport that we all love, hydroplane racing. I am your host, David Newton, and it's time once again, so sit back, relax, and welcome to Schertel Talk. Hello, race fans. Welcome back to the podcast. We're up to episode 114, and it's early March, and we're going to listen to my conversation with the late Doug Brow. And I talked with Doug shortly before he passed away. He passed away on December 13th, 2023. I was gearing up to edit this and go through the productions when I heard of his passing, and I put this on hold. It didn't feel right for me to put it out right away with his passing. I don't know if it was the right thing to do to wait, but I think just for my own mental space, I just put it into the archives. And I was thinking about him lately with getting back into season 6 of the podcast, and I wanted to share my conversation with Doug. He was such a great friend and person in the sport. I know many of you out there in podcast land knew him. But unfortunately, after a battle with cancer, he passed away December 13th, a few months ago. And I've known him for a long time, back in the 90s when he was crewing for Ken Muscatel, when I was hanging out and helping on the team with my father. For many years, he raced remote-controlled scale hydroplanes as well. He had a beautiful model of his dad's Miss Budweiser. Great man, and he had a great legacy with him and his father and racing. Hydroplanes of all sizes around the country, and being a part of hydroplane racing. I talked with him about his racing legacy and what it meant to him, and I want to share that story with you. Now, unfortunately, some of the audio quality isn't quite the best, as I was not able to meet with him in person, and this took place via phone call on Zoom, but I was able to preserve the audio. So let's listen in and celebrate the life of Doug Brow as we hear my last conversation with him. Joining me today on the phone, I'm talking with legendary hydroplane racer Doug Brow. Doug, thanks for joining the podcast today.
Thanks, David, for having me.
Yeah, looking forward to talking to you about your racing experience and your family's legacy. You've been around the Seattle area for a long time, and I know you and your father were kind of deep into hydroplane racing. So thinking about growing up in the area around Seattle, what did it mean to you to have, you know, the father so dedicated to hydroplane racing?
Well, as a kid, you know, well, when he was killed, I was only like 12 years old. But growing up as a kid, I mean, I remember it like it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. We grew up in Burien, and of course, he drove the Miss Burien. And so it was, as a kid, going to school and everything, you know, everybody thought it was pretty cool, you know, having hydroplane drivers, my dad. And so, you know, needless to say, you know, it was a lot of fun as a kid, especially in the summertime. You know, everybody wanted to hang out at the house, mm-hmm. you know, because he had the Miss Vitamel there, our family race boat. Mm-hmm. And then when he wasn't racing the big boats, the Miss Burien, Miss Exide, whatever, you know, we would take the Miss Vitamel racing. And so it was busy in the summertime, spring and summer, that's for sure.
I can imagine probably a lot of nights in the shop with you and your dad and fun memories there, right?
Yeah, well, like I said, you know, my job, you know, was when a tool was dropped and it rolled down into the sponson, my job was to crawl down into the boat and get the tools out, you know?
Yeah.
Or when they dropped screws or bolts or whatever it may be. Yeah, mm-hmm. That was my job, to crawl down in there and get them.
So I don't think I was as little as you were as a kid, but I remember my dad calling me a gopher in the shop because he'd always tell me to go for that, you know, go for this wrench, go get this.
Oh yeah, that was automatic. I mean, I was born a gopher, you know. Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Well, yep. Do you have a favorite memory? I mean, looking back, growing up around hydroplane racing with your father, I know he passed away when you were quite young, but
looking back, what's your favorite memory? Yeah.
There's a lot of them, David. You know, you think back, there's so many things that people, you know, a lot of the Hydro fans, you know, probably couldn't comprehend, you know, every year at Seafair, mm-hmm. in the middle of the week, Mom and Dad would have a cocktail party at the house. I mean, it was nothing. I didn't think anything of it, having Bill Cantrell, Rex Manchester, Red Loomis, Ron Musson, and Buddy Byers, you know, all these drivers at my house, you know, yeah. And they were all there, you know, and those wow. are the little things is what I remember, you know, it's yeah you know, those little things, you know, it's, and then of course, you know, when he drove the Exide, that was exciting, you know, when, you know, he broke the Mavericks, you know, Bill Stead's record, and, you know, 120.356 miles an hour, mm-hmm. you know, that's back in 1965, that's hauling ass.
Oh yeah.
You
oh,
know,
yeah.
that was fast, you know, mm-hmm. and, but, you know, but then, come race time, you know, you can be as fast as you want to be, but come race time, you know, stuff happens, and it did.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm sure everybody remembers, you know, a fuel line broke and mm-hmm. the boat burned up, you know, yeah. and, you know, and what could anybody do about it? Absolutely nothing.
Right.
You know, yeah. other than, you know, I don't know if a lot of people have seen that picture of Dad standing on the back of the boat waving the helicopter off because he's fanning the blaze of the fire onto the boat. You know, he wasn't waving at the helicopter pilot. He was, get the hell out of here. You gosh. Know, but anyway, you know, things like that, you know, things yeah. like that, you know, and then, you know, and then of course, when Bernie bought the Exide and the crew and the driver and everything to go with it, you know, then Budweiser took over, and, you know, He won Bernie's first four races. He won mm-hmm. Budweiser's first four races.
Yeah.
You know, that right there, you know, there's a lot of people that don't know that, you know,
well,
but.
Yeah. And he anyway, also won, know, the first race in Tri-Cities ever held there as well.
That absolutely. Yeah. He won the very first race, the Atomic Cup, 1966 in Tri-Cities, you know, neat stuff that, you know, it's, and as a kid, remembering that stuff and being there, you know, and that's cool. That's neat stuff to, you know, now that you ask me and now that I'm remembering this stuff, it's, you know, wow. Yeah. Neat stuff. Yep.
Well, going back to 1965 in Seattle, that Seafair, like you mentioned, he hit the 120 in qualifying, broke the record there. And I remember seeing pictures that come back to the dock, and there's oil all down the side of the boat and whatnot. But were you there? Did you see it happen in person?
Oh yeah. Like, oh, absolutely. I was there, you know. It was, you know, that boat, for some reason, if it wasn't throwing oil down the non-trip, if it wasn't breathing oil out the side of it, she wasn't running. I remember every time that boat would come in and it was fast, mm-hmm. there was oil down the side of the boat. But that's how those motors were, you know. If that motor wasn't breathing, it wasn't going fast.
Yeah.
You know, and then of course, you know, the nitrous and, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. You know,
yeah.
There's stories about the nitrous that I could argue the point with a few different people, but but we don't want to go there. We don't want to go there.
Okay. All right.
I mean, I'd love to, but I'd probably get a phone call.
Oh. Well, you're always welcome to share whatever you want here. So just how much trouble you want to be in.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, yeah. You know, as far as the first boat to ever use it, and there's mm-hmm. a lot of stories out there, you know, but, you know, and the guy that brought it into the sport, Bernie Van Cleve, you know, mm-hmm. he worked for Boeing, and from what I understand, you know, he found documents relating to the German Messerschmitt and how it could climb altitude so fast and everything was because of nitrous injection.
Wow.
And so they put it in the Vitamilk.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then they put it in the Exide.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Dixon had, you know, love to argue the point on who used it first, you know.
Yeah.
And there's some guys, there's some drag racers over in Spokane that, you know their stuff. I mean, it's, there's no doubt about it. And they used it, you know, Doc Johnson and Kenny Lydon and the Redskin. And, but yeah, again, stuff like that when I was a kid, it's amazing how I can remember this stuff.
Right.
But anyway, yeah. So, but yeah, to answer your question, I was there that day and the boat come back covered in oil and Dad was covered in oil and had a big, big grin on his face. He knew he did something. And it was a pretty cool deal. Yeah.
Wow. Yep. Well, that's impressive because he didn't have any radio contact back then to know right away his speeds.
Oh, no. No.
Yeah.
No. No, it was enough to hold yourself in the boat, let alone talk on the phone, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing it worked. I'm guessing that worked out pretty well in the Vitamilk as well, the nitrous injection.
Oh, yeah. Well, nobody touched the Vitamilk for whenever it was in the boat. They didn't run it all the time, you know, but when it was, when they did want to do a test run or, you know, test a system, so to speak, you know, yeah. Oh, the boat was just a rocket. I mean, nobody could touch it. Would have been kind of fun. I would have liked to put it in it and try it, but boat would have probably vibrated apart.
Okay. Well, but, your father had a unique nickname, and I'm just thinking about when I talk about high different racing with my friends and people I meet, they don't always get it, but one of the jobs I had, I met a person that he grew up in the area, was a big fan. And the first things out of his mouth was when I talked about hydroplane racing was Miss Berrien and the world's fastest milkman. So he was a big fan of your father. So where did that nickname come from?
Again, you know, back in the late 50s, you know, he was with Carnation Dairy, and then he really got the name after he's with Vitamilk. He was, you know, a milk distributor for Vitamilk Dairy. And it was, you know, he was a milkman. And it was just, to be honest with you, I'm not absolutely sure who it came from, but I'd be willing to bet that there was a guy on the crew, his name was George Parmenter, and he also worked for Vitamilk. And I'm not sure if he was a milkman or not, but anyway, I'd be willing to bet that he came up with it because he was quite the character. Him and Dad were pretty good friends.
Okay.
And so, you know, to come up with something like that, I wouldn't put it past George to do that. Yeah.
Well,
fun stuff.
Did you get to ever travel very much with him when he went to the races, like when he went to the big boats and
back
east and whatnot?
Not really. I mean, on the West Coast. No. Well, us kids, you know, we had to stay home. We didn't get to go back east. But there was one year we did get to go to Detroit.
Okay.
I remember that. And but old mom, she was the worrywart. She didn't want us, you know, oh, Detroit, kids can't go to Detroit. And but, you know, Coeur d'Alene, but all the West Coast, Coeur d'Alene, you know, we were in all those and, you know, back-to-back wins in Coeur d'Alene. And it would have been fun to go back east, but I was pretty young, you know, so to appreciate it the way, you know, I would have wanted to, wouldn't have been able to happen. But,
oh, for sure.
But anyway, a lot of good memories.
Well, in your dad's career, he had a lot of great wins and big moments. And you said he got the first four victories for Bernie, biggest owner of the sport we ever had. And unfortunately, a year after racing for him, it had a terrible crash in Tampa Bay, the end of his life. Dark day in history. It was a dark time in hydroplane sport of racing, lost a lot of great legends. But you continued with hydroplane racing. How were you able to continue that torch?
In secret.
Yeah.
Mom didn't like it at all. She, you know, there was a lot of years where, you know, we would go visit at Seafair. And then as I got older, I would sneak over to Tri-Cities. But, you know, I crewed on a lot of the Unlimiteds. And mom didn't like it, but, you know, I did. And she knew she, you know, was she'd play hard trying to stop me. You know, I mean, you grow up from birth doing something, you know, you just don't let it go.
Right.
And, so, you know, it, yeah, as I got older, it got harder for her. And then, you know, come driving. I mean, when we were growing up, we had outboards, you know, mm-hmm. Dad would buy us these outboards and stick motors on the back. And we go to Angle Lake and over by SeaTac Airport mm-hmm. and crash them and destroy them. And he'd rebuild them. He'd rebuild them for us. And we go do it again up at Lake Taps. We had property up at Lake Taps up in, okay. you know, above Auburn. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a lot of boats on the bottom of that lake. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, that's some good memories there.
Well, I can only imagine, you know, continuing the legacy with that. I mean, I lost my father. It's completely different, but still just being around the boats still just different meaning.
Yeah. No. Well, you know, I don't know if I'd say that, David. Your father was great. And he had a lot to do with hydroplane racing.
He had a lot of influence on it.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah, Roger was a great guy. Really great guy.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, thinking back at your father's legacy, all the wins he's had, all the, you know, impressions he made, what does it mean to you?
I think about it different than, you know, a fan would, I guess. That's hard to answer. You know, the legacy, I mean, I suppose it's a legacy, but, you know, I grew up watching it. It's nothing. I don't think about it that way. I don't know if that answered your question, but, it was second nature to me. You know, it's what we did.
Yeah.
It's what we did every weekend. Mm-hmm. You know, the most thing I wanted in life was a paper route, and I couldn't have one because of hydroplane racing. I could, on the weekends, we were gone every weekend boat racing. And, I wasn't. There's a lot of things I didn't get to do that most kids did do, and it was because of boat racing. But that's okay. That's okay. I like that. But still, it's it's funny in a way if you think about it. Mm-hmm. I wanted a paper route.
That's funny. So it sounds like it was just a way of life. You don't look back and look at the wins.
It was
the points. It's just that's life.
That's exactly what it was. It was life. It was, you know, what points? What? How many points did he get for what? You know, it was, we were there to race, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, he never did get a championship. He came close, you know, he came real close to a few gold cups, but never got it, mm-hmm. you know, but he was the hardest driver out there. I know that.
Mm-hmm. He was.
And a lot of people don't agree with me on that.
Yeah. Everyone has their favorite, right? Everyone has the one they want to
see about us. Yeah. Oh, yeah. from what I've heard rumors of, he was a lot of people's favorite. He was a mm-hmm. go-getter, that's for sure.
Oh, definitely. Yep. Definitely. Well, you talked about him getting outboards for you. And when did you start racing? You know, inboards and stepping up with your racing career.
Well, I guess it was 1980, I guess. I was crewing on the Joy of Mia, Armin and Neil Iapicino's boat. And we were at Sweet Home down in Oregon, and Neil got killed driving someone else's boat at 2 1/4. And after that, it was hard, but Armin asked me if I wanted to drive the Joy of Mia, and I mean, here it is, probably one of the fastest 280s in the nation, mm-hmm. and absolutely. So Armin set me up, to the disagreement of quite a few people, but There's a lot of people that thought they should have got the ride, but I did. And anyway. So my first ride, my first competitive ride was with Armin in the Joy Mia, and had a lot of fun. Had a gas. Yeah. Won a few races. But that was the start right there. That's what got me going competitively, I should say. Yeah. Yep. And then I had a 2.5 after Armin. I had a 2.5 liter and okay. Did really well with that boat for a long time.
Yeah.
And then on to bigger and better, 7 liters and unlimited lights in the 90s. And that was a lot of fun back then. Yeah. Hopscotching between boats.
Well, you mentioned on other lights, and that was, I mean, look back on that. That was such a fun series that was really a great partnership, I thought, with Unlimiteds. I know you raced that series for a while. Talk to that journey that you had with Unlimited Lights back then. I don't think a lot of people nowadays really can kind of like appreciate what that kind of brought to the sport.
You know, I drove for John Hogan. I drove for a few people, you know, and in and out of different boats. But John Hogan, I finally got into with John and drove, you know, his boat. It was a Nate Brown boat, and boy, it was fast. And Ron Jones Sr. got a hold of it and made some changes on it. And we finally got the thing wound up, and it was a goer. It was so much fun to drive. It was so fast. It was a small little boat. And, you know, it was so light and so small, and it was a handful to drive, but it always recovered and it always came back in. And that's what I liked about it. But the Unlimited Light series, it was, you know, there was a lot of different people involved in it. There was the East Coast portion of it and the West Coast portion of it. And, you know, to call it East Coast and West Coast, it was really too bad that we couldn't get together. Mm-hmm. And run a series with, like you just said, with the Unlimiteds, you know, and you would have the Unlimiteds and the Unlimited Lights. Mm-hmm. And that never did happen. There was some races on the East Coast, you know, where they would have a few Unlimited Lights and then they'd come out West and there'd be a few Unlimited Lights. But, you know, we could never get the whole package put together.
Yeah.
And that was really too bad. But, It was a lot of fun, you know. It was affordable. That's what was fun about it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people got involved in it and could afford to do it.
Right.
And then they started, of course, it always happens. Somebody wants to dip their fingers in the pot and they want to change the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then there it goes. Now you start putting stock blowers on the stock big block. Mm-hmm. And there's people that couldn't afford that. And then there goes your class.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was like the 7 liter class years ago, back in the late 80s and 90s. I was looking the other day, I saw a High Point list for the 7 liter Grand Nationals. And there was like, God, I want to say there was 30 some boats that scored points.
Wow.
But because of somebody wanting to change the rules, there went the class. And now there's none. There's a few Grand Nationals out there, you know, but not like it was, or not like it could be.
Right.
And that's sad when that stuff happens.
It's so unfortunate when that happens, because it doesn't matter what size of class it is.
Yeah.
I mean, even the small model RC boats to the Unlimited Lights, you know, Grand Nationals, it just messes up the racing and you lose interest and people can't afford it. And there it goes.
Yeah. There it goes. Yeah. You got it. Yeah. That stock 7 liter motor that everybody could afford to run is now by the wayside.
You know,
that's the sad part of the sport when stuff like that happens.
Well, back in the 90s, you got, I'm not sure, I can't remember if it was your first ride in Unlimited or not, but you had a chance to run or race drive for the Miss Excite and Seafair. I think it was 96 or so. But that was approximately about 30 years after your dad ran for the same sponsor. What was that like to be able to race an unlimited on the same body of water under the same name as your dad?
Yeah, that's how often can that happen to somebody or for somebody? You know what I mean?
Right.
What do you say? You know, I mean, Mike Jones gave me the opportunity to get in the boat and the Red Robin Miss X side and went out and, you know, what do you say? I mean, it was unbelievable. It was one of those once in a lifetime things, and Mom didn't like it, but oh well. but it was a neat experience. A lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to break into Unlimited's driving the same boat your dad drove. Not the same boat, but the same sponsor. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And 30 years later.
Yeah. On the same lake.
Same body of water. Yep.
Yeah.
Good memories. Those are fun memories. Yep.
Yeah. You know, in the 90s, still, you had that experience, and you got a few rides on the Unlimiteds.
Yeah.
But I remember there was a year.
I was just going to say, I got a few rides out of the deal in the 90s. And into the 2000s, you know, Fred Leland put me in a couple of his boats. And, you know, I lived up in Friday Harbor, up in the San Juan Islands, and Rick Campbell lived up there. And he brought me in to help build one of Ken's boats, you know, the purple boat, purple and pink boat. That's mm-hmm. what I call it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I, you know, drove the boat around, got in the truck and drove the boat around the country and did that for a couple of years. And I got in Ken's boat a couple of times. I was told I was maybe a backup driver, but it never really happened.
No. Yeah. You know,
back then Ken was pretty tough to get him out of that seat.
Right. I was wondering if you were backup.
Yeah, well, those words were said, but it never happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, and like I said, Ken had his butt glued into that seat, and there wasn't anybody else that was going to, you know, take that from him.
Yeah.
But that's okay. Yeah, you know, that's okay. He's done a lot for the sport, and I appreciate the opportunity. One year, well, I can't remember what year it was, in Tri-Cities, I got in the boat and I was going to go out and qualify, and something happened. I don't remember what it was right offhand, but I never got to take the boat out.
Mm-hmm.
And, but anyway, between Ken and, you know, and Fred Leland, and mm-hmm. I drove a few of Fred's boats, and, mm-hmm. I actually won a heat at Seafair.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else jumped the gun, but that's their fault, not mine.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, I was on time. They weren't, you know. So
that's what counts.
In fact, I got my, there's a case right here in the room I'm in the house, and I'm looking at that trophy.
Oh, fine.
I'll be darned. But
well,
anyway, yeah, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, back when, so I remember hanging around the crew a little bit when you crewed on the Superior Racing team in the late 90s with the pink and purple monster.
Yeah.
I just remember my dad always having some fond memories of Ken's cruise over the years. Did you have a, you know, favorite memory of, you know, working on the boat with Ken or for the team?
I think the memories came from the team. You know, Ken was a busy guy. Back then he was involved in the politics of the sport,
mm-hmm.
and he would run down, jump in the boat, drive it. And mm-hmm. you didn't see much of Ken really, but that's okay. Cause he was keeping the sport together. Because back then, that's what it needed, was someone to do that.
Right.
And that was his job. And but I mean, back then it was, you know, me and you know, Jim Bakke. And, you know, there was a bunch of guys on the crew, and we all got together so well, and we all worked together so well. And lots of memories amongst the crew guys back then, you know.
Yeah.
Life out on the road was fun. Yep.
Yeah.
I think that's the fond memories is that, being out on the road and and, you know, working with the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yep.
Well, I just remember that, you know, you said the pink and purple boat, that's what you called it. I just remember Bill Fritz, I think he helped out a couple times with Ken's crew, and he mentioned to me one time he was walking down to get lunch or something, and someone asked him if he worked for 31 Flavors Baskin Robbins, and he just about lost it there. So
that's funny. I never heard that one.
Well, you remember those uniforms, the pink and purple?
In fact, I still have one of the crew shirts, the pink and purple and green.
Yeah.
I remember being on the island and painting the boat and painting the uprights.
Yeah.
And painting them and taking the mask off, and oh my God, that's ugly. You know, you're gonna run that. Remember Rick Campbell? He wanted
was,
it.
Was that his? Okay. His thing?
That was his thing. That was his. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh boy. Yep.
Well, fast forward in time, and I remember a few years back, you were helping out the sport. H1 as a referee.
Yep.
How did you get involved to be a referee in the sport and helping out in that? And how was your time like?
Well,
on that side of the sport.
What was it? 96, I believe it was. I got a call from Jim Codling, that was in there then, and Mike Noonan.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a call to ask if I'd come and help. And that was at Tri-Cities. And I thought, well, okay, I guess. So I drove over there, and next thing I knew, I was the helicopter referee. I was up in the air in the helicopter making the calls.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat in the helicopter for, well, about 6 years. I was up in the helicopter and making calls from up there. And of course, nobody liked the calls, but you know, well, nobody likes anything in H1 or the Unlimiteds.
Right.
But, you know, they, and then I got out of there and they had some new people come in. I just didn't want to get up in that helicopter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, I made a change and I started running the tower. I started running the race course. And, so I made all the calls off the tower and ran the race from the tower.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, that was that job. I mean, there's a lot of different jobs in H1 that a lot of people don't realize, you know, is part of the deal. There's a lot of people behind the scenes that, people don't realize how important they are. But anyway, I was chief referee a couple of, you know, for a few races.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't fun. And, you know, the owners make the rules. And when you abide by the rules, they still don't like it. So that's how that works.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that's too bad, too. You know, it really makes it tough on the people. You know, all they want to do is run their boat and run by the rules. And when you change the rules, you know, that's pretty tough to do.
So I think it wasn't that glamorous.
Yeah. But. Oh, no, no, no. No, I was there for, I want to say 9-10 years. I did it.
Okay.
And finally, I just got tired of getting beat up every Monday morning in the newspaper, literally,
mm-hmm.
literally beat up, chastised and verbally abused, you know, especially, you know, Tri-Cities, the tower's way down the river. And I would have to jump in a golf cart or on a little scooter or something and drive down to the tower and then drive back. And at the end of the final heat, driving back to the pits. There was a couple of times I swear I was going to get clotheslined off that scooter. You know, people with sly remarks, you know, oh, there's the dumbass, you know, but, unbelievable. Yeah. And true story too, you know, it's people, you know, at airports Monday morning at people flying home to Seattle Monday morning, and here I, you know, here we are getting on the same plane, and you can hear the sly remarks. So it wasn't fun anymore. You know, it's I always told myself, you know, when boat racing wasn't fun anymore, I wasn't going to do it anymore.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much where it went. You know, it wasn't fun anymore. Mm-hmm. I love the sport with all my heart. I always will. Mm-hmm. And I would love to get back into it. And I would love to, just because I love the sport so much. But I'm not going to get verbally chastised every Sunday night and Monday morning.
No, it's not worth it.
You know? Yeah. No, yeah. It's not. It's not at all.
Well, you didn't totally walk away from everything, because a few years ago, you located your dad's old inboard that Miss Vitamilk talked about earlier. Yeah, so where
it turned fun again.
Yeah.
So where it turned fun again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a buddy of mine, I'd been looking for the boat for years, and a buddy of mine, I knew it was around somewhere, but I obviously didn't know where. Well, a buddy of mine was a UPS driver, and he went into this warehouse down by Blackstock Lumber, down by Lake Union.
Okay.
And he went in and delivered some boxes and everything. And he looked over in the corner, and he saw it was a hydroplane with a whole bunch of boxes stacked on top of it and stuff like that. And him and I grew up together. He knew the Miss Vitamilk. I mean, he was my kid. We went to school together, grade school, junior high, you know, and he went to races with our family. He knew the boat. Mm-hmm. And so he asked the guy if he could go over and look at it. And the guy said, well, yeah, go ahead. And he went over and took some of the boxes off of it. And he looked in it, and he knew immediately it was the boat. And he says, okay, well, thank you. And he couldn't get outside fast enough. And he calls me and he says, you got to get down here. And he says, I think I found the boat. And
wow.
So I wasn't doing anything at the moment. So I raced down there and knocked on the door, and the guy answered the door, and I asked him, you know, a buddy of mine was here a while ago, UPS driver. And he looked at, you have a hydroplane here. And he says, yeah. And I said, you mind if I come in and look at it? He says, oh, come on in. So I went and looked at it, and I knew immediately. In fact, I knew immediately because there was a St. Christopher medal jammed underneath one of the battens.
Okay.
And I could see the very edge of it. And that was Dad's. And I don't know how it stayed there, but it was there. And so I could tell that part of the boat was still original.
Wow.
And so I sat down with the guy and I told him the story, you know, the family story and what the boat was and what I wanted to do with it. And the guy almost had the guy in tears, you know, telling him the family story and about Dad and all the stuff. And he says, well, you better get that thing out of here before I change my mind. He gave it to me.
Wow. That's
and,
cool.
Yeah. He gave me the boat. So I called Don Kelson and Jerry Kelson because I knew that's where the boat would be fixed, you know, whatever, redone. So I got with Don, and he came down, and it had fallen down onto the trailer, you know, it had rotted through it. So we got the boat down to Don's shop and turned it over and got her upside down and started tearing it apart. And it's all over but the shouting, you know. That was it. And the boat was reconstructed back to its exactly the way Dad had it back when he was the milkman. It was the Miss Vitamilk. And the boat to this day is the same exact engine, same exact paint, same exact everything the way Dad had it. And so it's a pretty cool deal. Pretty cool story. And,
how long did that take to restore?
Yeah. It took about a year. I wasn't in a big hurry.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I wasn't in a big hurry. Anyway, neat deal.
Well, I'm just curious, like the first time you sat in the boat and you took that out on the water, like what emotions were going through your mind?
I was in tears. I mean, I'll be honest with you, you know, Lake Spanaway, you know, I got in the boat and it was like something came over me, and my sister was there, you know, and my, you know, what of my family's left was there. And yeah, it was just a big rush came over me. It's something everybody should feel.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then the very first time I ran it, I went out and the strut fell out of it. So, yeah. So I had to take it back to Don's, and Don, we had to fix that. But, but yeah, the boat's been a lot of fun. Once we got all the bugs ironed out of it and got the vibrations out of it and everything, the thing is so much fun to drive.
Yeah.
It's just a Cadillac, you know, it's against all your normal thinking when you drive it, because you don't think, you know, well, here comes this turn and I got to turn this tub, you know, and sure enough, you know, there's a way to drive it. And Freddie Wright, I don't know if you know who Fred Wright is.
No.
He's a machinist. He's done he's worked on a lot of Unlimiteds.
Okay.
And he's built a lot of the rudders and a lot of the systems for boats. And when Dad was racing the big boats, Fred Wright would drive the Miss Vitamilk if Dad was chasing points or whatever.
Okay.
And, you know, so Fred sat me down and explained how to drive the boat. And, and sure enough, yeah, the thing is just, it was a Cadillac. You know, there's this particular way you got to drive a conventional hydroplane. And once you get that feel, it's there's nothing like it. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. Lots of fun.
Well, can you describe what it means to you to have that back?
It's one of them things, David, it's hard to describe, you know. I mean, I got it right out here in my garage, you know, you know, every time I go out in my shop, it's right there. And right now, you know, because of, you know, the cancer that I have and financially right now, I the motor needs to be redone. And Marty Hack, who's the great motor builder around here, I wouldn't let anybody else do it, told me, you know, that right now I have the motor's, you know, tired, and I did a great job maintaining it for a few years, but it's really tired, and he's afraid if I go out and run it that I'll blow the motor up and then I'll have nothing.
Yeah.
And so he says, you're better off just, you know, you've raced before, you know, just sit back and relax. And when it's time to do it again, you know, we'll put the motor back together. We'll freshen it up and we'll get her back in the water. So it's been a couple years since the boat's run, and, but that's okay. I'm good with that. I've been to a boat race before. You know, I don't need to race every weekend. There's a lot of people, you know, that want me to get back out there, and I want to get back out there. But when I do something like this, I do it right, and I'm not gonna throw something together just to go out and run the boat. I don't need to just go out and run the boat. You know, I want to go out and make sure it comes back in. Anyway, yeah. She's a neat toy. She's a lot of fun, and it's a keepsake, you know. Mm-hmm. If I ever get rid of it, I think it'll probably. If I ever get rid of it, I think it'll be a Viking funeral. You know, like the Hawaii Kai.
Yeah, I was just gonna say. Well, yeah. Unfortunately, that's down there in the sound. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you got the Vitamilk back and it's restored, and it's such a great connection to have with your father. That it's very special.
Oh yeah. It is very special. You're right.
I know we've been talking for a while, and I don't want to keep it too much longer, but it's one last question. Just
sure.
Thinking about all the years in your racing career, whether it was driving wrenching with your dad, with your friends. Do you have that one special year? Because I feel like we always have that special year in racing where it just stands out, like everything went right. Maybe not all in the water, but just everything went right in your mind. Do you have that? What year is that for you?
David, you're being tough. Wow. There's a lot of them. There's so many small memories, you know, that so many small memories, just the little things. I remember one time at Lake Spanaway, Bud Burns come up to me when he was driving the Shady Lady. Mm-hmm. And he said, "You want to drive the boat?" I said, "Yeah, heck yeah, I want to drive the boat. You know, that's a Shady Lady. Hell yeah, I want to drive it." So I went out in one heat as a Division 1-7 leader and went out in the boat, and I wasn't even trying, but went out and set a new world record, but it didn't count because Howie LaBrie broke down on the last lap and there wasn't enough boats to cross the finish line. but it was so much fun because a lot of people don't remember, but Bud Burns, you know, he had that big old pot belly and he weighed a ton. And the boat kind of ran downhill when he would drive it. It was still fast, but boy, it would kind of be downhill. And I got in the thing and I was just a skinny little runt. And the thing actually broke loose and flew when I drove it. And I didn't even realize it, but I broke the Division 1-7 liter world record by a considerable amount.
Wow.
And, but you know, it's little things like that, that, you know, you remember, you know, that, little things like that, that'll always stick with you.
Yeah.
You know, the 2.5 liter that Sam Bryant owned that I drove. And, what year was it? 1980. I can't remember what year. 84, 85. I don't know. But between Sam and I, we ran 34 races and won 27 of them.
Jeez.
And that was in a Larry Campbell hull. Jeff and Mike Campbell.
Yeah.
As their dad built the boat, and that thing was so fast.
Wow.
It was so fast. But back then, you know, everybody, that little stock Pinot motor with a little carburetor on it. And it was just a great little boat. But that right there, you know, that you remember stuff like that. You know, everybody called me Cheater Cam. They never pay the money to tear the motor down, but they call me Cheater Cam.
Well, they couldn't call you Cheater Cam if they broke it down and you're illegal.
That's right. That's why they never did. Yeah. Well, right on, David. Thank you for the call.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun. I'm glad you called me to do this. You know, you.
Yeah.
And now I'm thinking about things that I haven't thought about for a long time and neat stuff. I'm glad you asked me to do this.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun having you on. I appreciate it.
Well, listeners, no matter what you have in your cup, whether it's water, juice, milk, or a beer, let's raise it up. Let's give a toast and remember the great life of Doug Brow and his family's legacy in hydroplane racing. Doug, this is for you. And enjoy your time up there with all the other hydroplane, all the other people from the sport that we've lost over the years. We miss you, Doug.